the suggestive learning, that's a learning which is taking into consideration not only the conscious impressions we are receiving every time in every communicative process, of course in the process of teaching and learning as well, but also taking into consideration the different kind of more or less unconscious impressions we are receiving during the communications. And the suggestive accelerated learning is taking into consideration namely those unconscious processes, connecting them with the conscious processes.
English language teaching under the covers.
Hello and welcome back to ELT Under the Covers, and in this video we are going to be looking at a teaching methodology. We're going to be looking at Suggestopedia. Now, Suggestopedia is a teaching method developed by Georgi Losnov, and he was a psychologist, and the methodology, basically the main thrust is he's trying to create an optimal state for learning by using suggestive, almost hypnotic type classroom techniques. Basically, what he was wanting, what you were wanting, is to have students be in both a relaxed and receptive state. Very interesting. But first, I am Neil of Teen Teacher Fame, and I'm joined today by the equally hypnotic Professor Rich.
You should have come slash Professor Rich for all your hypnosis needs and other things. So here we are, Suggestopedia. It's a really funky one. As some of these 1970s teaching methods are, Suggestopedia's, it's kind of got a bit of all kinds of stuff. It kind of makes me think that, like, back then, you know, when someone was like inventing a methodology, they were just kind of like a kid in a candy store going like, hey, you know what? I'll have a bit of that and a bit of this and a bit of that. Whereas these days it's all boring and based on, you know, efficiency and all the rest of it. But back then it was like there was more flamboyance. And Suggestopedia really makes me think of that, because what elements have you got? You've got, as you say, the element which I suspect is the most worthwhile element of it, mm-hmm. which is this idea of getting people into an ideal state for learning, mm-hmm. which involves listening to, I think it was playing Baroque music.
Music. Our students are in some parts of the process of teaching. They are listening to the music, especially chosen. That's music from pre-classic and classic, for example, Mozart, Beethoven, Vivaldi, Corelli. They are listening to the music, and at the same time, they are listening to the voice of the teacher. That's a kind of recital.
Yeah. Why it had to be Baroque, I don't know. I mean, again, that's the kind of the you know, you can just imagine Georgi Losnov just being like, yes, Baroque. Oh, how about some Beethoven? No.
No.
Baroque.
No.
Yeah. No. Baroque. Right, so Baroque music in the background. He said that the students had to have comfy chairs. He suggested plants should be in the room. So we're getting a bit of a Michelle Thomas-y vibe there,
yeah.
aren't we? Because he sort of does that with the plants and everything.
The music is helping us to create this special kind of psychological relaxation. We would like to help the students to learn in a real psychological state, to be concentrated in and at the same time psychologically relaxed.
And then he has some other things, which is he sort of structures quite a lot how the language learning would actually take place. And this is probably where it gets a bit more controversial and moves away from methods of today. So there's this idea of a deciphering, mm-hmm. Where students will have a text in there, which is partly in their own language, and well, half of the text in their own language and in the target language. Mm-hmm. And the students sort of work together to work out bits of the language. The teacher reads the text so the students sort of know how it's said, and then after this reading and digesting and sort of discussing, then they have to like demonstrate what they've learned in some way, which also can be quite bizarre. It's, you know,
well, no, you missed a step, because it kind of, that's the elaboration. Before that,
right.
There's this step of a concert session, or what they call it, like a memorization seance, and that can be like that could be like the active component, where the teacher's kind of more involved and reading and helping out the students, and then there's kind of like a passive component where they aren't really involved, and they just kind of listen and relax as the teacher kind of goes and reads the text and stuff. Right. It's kind of all it could be a bit fluid, but yeah.
So it's sort of like listening and then listening and repeating, basically, used in different ways and a number of times, and then the students somehow express what they've learned through like acting things out or songs. So that's where it gets a little bit interesting. And then they have something that's very familiar in community language teaching today, which is they have a freer production stage, which is where they just talk with no interruption and correction. Mm-hmm. And that is really a fluency-based communicative activity that we have today. Mm-hmm. That, again, no necessary pressure to use the language that they've learned that day, but an opportunity to use it. Mm-hmm. So that very much is part of this method that's carried on to communicative language teaching. That's my sort of breakdown on it.
And what we actually spoke with Chris Lonsdale from the How to Learn Language in 6 Months TEDx talk fame, and he actually used techniques from, I think he actually used Suggestopedia at one point, but he also includes that with his own methodology and his own way of learning languages. So we're actually going to play you a clip now of kind of how he set up that classroom.
I read Georgi Lozanov's book four times, and I put together Suggestopedia-based learning for Westerners to learn Mandarin. So I did one in Hong Kong for a couple of weeks, and I did another one in Beijing for a couple of weeks. And it's an enormous amount of work to do it really well. Mm. But apart from Lozanov's work, was it's not so much that you've got a really relaxed environment and all of that. The core was the music. So, but not just that, it was a lexical mapping of the language. Mm-hmm. So you know, mother tongue, target, space, all done in time with the music. The mother tongue chunk would be a meaning chunk, mm-hmm. and it would be mapped with an equal meaning chunk in the target language. Okay. So that was part of it, okay? And the Baroque was about putting you into an alpha state, breaking it up with lots of games and exercises, having posters around the room, colorful posters where the language was represented in those posters.
Yeah, I think he also mentioned in our interview, because Chris Lonsdale didn't have a background in language teaching. He'd gone to China as a businessman and kind of got into language teaching industry that way by learning sort of Chinese himself and then setting up a business.
But he did have a background in psychology, like what he was kind of studying.
Yeah, and I remember that. And I remember when we were talking to him, he spoke about Georgi Lozanov, didn't he? More so than Suggestopedia, even. I think it was me that mentioned Suggestopedia, and then he started talking about the ideas of Georgi Lozanov. So obviously he did apply those techniques somewhat in his kind of learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the idea of an optimal state for learning really chimes with me, and yeah, I think it's very true. And being aware of your students' emotional states, or preparing them to use or acquire language when they're in particular states, could be quite useful. It didn't just have to be being relaxed, but also trying to recreate pressured scenarios for when they have to use language. So when I've taught IELTS, if I'm doing the exams, I try to kind of replicate what that exam room would be like, and the dynamic either between you and the examiner, or you know, that kind of scenario where they're all in little booths, you know, writing away, and you know, there's a clock ticking and an invigilator walking around. If you're not familiar with that state, and you've been learning as you've been, you know, relaxed going to and forth work on your commute, and then suddenly you're in this different environment, for me it's kind of jarring emotionally and, you know, psychologically, because you're trying to recreate something while also being in a time of stress. And, you know, I always find that difficult. So, you know, I always kept that in mind when this was even before Suggestopedia. So I'm very interested to see creating the environment, but also the structuring of it as well. So what we've got for that is we can actually look at, we've got a video from the 1970s of them, a class doing this Suggestopedia methodology, and we can kind of look at that and break that down and go through it and see what else we can extract.
With a reading passage, what I'd like to do is to ask that you get ready by relaxing a little bit.
Barack.
Sit back. I'm going to put on some different music, and then I'm going to read. I'm going to read something, and I'm going to act it out for you.
So this is the deciphering phrase.
Turn the music off, and I'm going to read it again, but this time without acting it out. And at that point, I'd like you just to listen and to see how much you remember and you understand. Okay? So that's how we'll begin.
Oh, the music goes off. Oh no, she's changing the music.
Breath, being grateful. Such a nice, beautiful morning today. You'll like this music. It reminds me of the early morning.
That's great music.
Nice. You kind of pretend you're back home in your apartment and it's Saturday morning and you didn't have to go anywhere.
I see this. I don't think that is Baroque, is it, that she's playing now? Because that's a Beethoven piece.
Yeah. So
this is my bed. My name
is
Sarah.
Just like classical.
I'm about to start reading the passage. So, Sarah woke up early, the sun pouring through the apartment window. She stretched lazily and placed her feet one by one on the floor. Rising from the bed, she tiptoed through the boxes, which lay everywhere, and put a kettle of water on to boil. Waiting, she glanced over all her possessions.
A kettle of water, and then she like touches a teapot.
Grateful she had the whole day before her. She scooped instant coffee into a cup and poured in.
It's a heck of a lot of realia here.
Stirring the coffee, she tried to decide where to begin. She took a quick sip of coffee and searched out her box of books. She ordered them neatly on a shelf.
So I think what you can see and probably appreciate is how prior to these sort of 1970s methods, one of which being the Suggestopedia, language teaching was kind of a very different thing, wasn't it?
Quite authoritarian.
Well, you had audio linguism, you had direct method, you had grammar translation method, which had gone out of fashion a little bit, but it was still there. And yeah, authoritarian, I suppose, teacher centric, certainly. And very much like say this and say that, say this and say that. Yeah. And then, although we look at this now, what she's doing here, and there's probably a lot that we can criticize about it. I mean, for example, you said, well, there's a hell of a lot of realia. I mean, yeah, she is relying on a lot of realia. Not all of it is that accurate either. Like I said, that's a teapot, and she referred to it as a kettle. And, you know, a lot of the things she's saying, I mean, she's telling a story there. And she's kind of doing stuff and telling a story. And you kind of have to think, is that, I mean, is it going to be that useful for them all to learn these kind of third person expressions of someone doing something while they're doing it themselves? I guess it sort of depends on what the level of these learners are and what's going to happen next. But, you know, there's certain things you could criticize about it, is what I'm saying, especially in terms of the authenticity and things like that. However, in fact, yeah, authenticity is where I would go with it, because I think there's a good idea there of the teacher being the model and sort of giving the students a chance to kind of work it out, because we certainly do that quite a lot in language teaching now. But there's it's very kind of synthetic and very drama-like what she's doing as an activity. However, if we consider this in the context of sort of what language teaching was before this, then it's a massive step forward. It's a massive step forward from, as you would call it, kind of the authoritarian, teacher-centric, speak and repeat, translate this sentence style of learning. And I think that's kind of more what we're taking from that.
Well, this is, it's quite, if you think of, I mean, I'm going to stress it as well, because, you know, you've brought it up, but it's a dramatic U-turn. It's a screeching. It's not just like a little grammar translation and then kind of moving into, I don't know, some gap-fill exercises or something, whatever. You know, like a little progression to move away from it. It's, they're like a 360. There's car crashes everywhere. It's so funny that it goes all the way around. And, you know, it's kind of... But the thing is, I think in the 1970s, what's interesting here, and I don't know if this is related, this is what sprung to mind when I was watching this. 1970s was a big thrust of child development psychology with like Eric Erickson, and Dr. Spock released his book about childcare that, you know, went on to sell nearly as much as the Bible or something like that. It was crazy amount. But there was a big push of a new wave of child psychology and development, and how that came about. And the way that they approached that was to look at how children learn and try to kind of like replicate that. And one component of that was language acquisition and development. And if you think about it here, now, if you think about, instead of the teacher, that is a parent. And instead of the students, those are children. So children are kind of like, in terms of language acquisition, they're kind of like icebergs. They, you know, they absorb and receive a lot first before they produce anything. And most of the time, they're just kind of observing, you know, their parents or caregivers going about their day. And one of the things from child development that came about was this idea of having a caregiver or a parent narrate what they're doing during the day to aid in the development of the child with their language acquisition. And that's something that's so prominent today, and that was kind of developed in the 1970s. And it reminded me of this. It's kind of a natural inductive way of learning. You're just kind of observing someone that you are connected with, you're engaged with, and you're kind of figuring out what they're doing. and trying to pick up on words. Now, it feels like a natural way and a way that we would learn as a child. The problem I see is that, like when I'm doing this with my kid, is I'm making a cup of coffee every morning and I'm saying, yeah, I'm making a coffee, I'm pouring in the water and, I'm stirring the pot. It's again and again and again. And this is just one moment. So I'm not sure how effective that would be if it's in this
isolation. I 100% see what you're saying with that. And obviously repetition is a very useful way of extending meaningful inputs. But the theory or the rationale with this would tell us that adults are able to make up for repetition to some extent by doing a bit of cognitive work that kids can't do, right? Because you're not going to expect your three-year-old to,
I'm a taskmaster.
Exactly. But this is why, for example, we have lots of these kind of puzzly type things that we do with adult classes, but not so much with kids, because kids aren't cognitively capable of doing it and they don't need it.
Good point.
They just need that repetition. I'm not saying that, her doing it once is necessarily going to be as useful as, it's definitely not as lots of repetition. But the idea would be that these adults are now going to analyze this together, and that process of analyzing it is what will help it take root rather than hearing it 100 times. Because this will always going to be a problem for adult learners. They don't have the time that kids have, and they don't have the dedicated teacher that kids have, which is parents, right?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. So I'm interested to see, going beyond this deciphering phase and how they make it more, adult and more cognitively engaging, because this is very much discovery.
Yeah, maybe if we should skip ahead a little bit.
Yeah, sure, that's fine.
Yeah. faded the volume before pressing stop. That's an audiophile right there. I can appreciate that level of detail. Not just stopping it, but just fade it out. Don't stop it.
Is it not working?
Oh, sorry. Hang on. Just realized I paused the screen share by mistake. Jesus. Okay. The fade.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask that you just listen. I'm going to put on a different kind of music, and I'm going to read this at normal speed.
Now, that's very interesting, her instructions there. She said, I'm going to ask that you just listen.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've heard that line before, but that is definitely an instruction that teachers use today.
Yeah.
You just listen. And if you do a dictagloss, then you always say that, don't you? Just listen. I'm going to say it twice. And then blah, 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 blah. Right. It's kind of almost like it's similar to what they're doing.
Oh, it's very clear.
Listen to it and see if you can kind of bring the images back of what it was that I did and see how much you can understand just as I go back through it. Okay?
So it's like layering. This is can you pause it for a second?
Yeah, of course.
So can we pause it on someone else?
What, you don't want to see Jamie Lee Curtis?
Where is it?
Deep breath and see how easy English is going to be as you hear it played again.
Okay, yeah, just pause it here. So there's a part of this that's I want to bring up, because this is actually what we're seeing is in action is what's called the double planing. I think it's double planing theory. So it's this idea that when they do the deciphering, when they do the teaching, that they present two layers, one directed at the conscious and one directed at the unconscious. So I, you know, when I'm watching this, I'm kind of thinking, so now maybe they're trying to, first it was more of a unconscious thing. They're just kind of like watching the little, I don't know, drama or role play, whatever she's doing, as she reads and does that thing, does her stuff. And now they're actively trying and consciously trying to listen and reimagine what they're doing. So I'm starting to see layers here. Reading too much into it with the conscious or unconscious, but I think that they have this idea in mind when they're trying to approach this method to hit both of those points. And it's really interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is a layer of cognitive engagement, is them trying to imagine it while they're listening to it. So there is something good going on there. It would rely, I think, on most of these learners having the level near enough to understand what's going on anyway. But I suppose you could argue that for any audio that you use in class.
Yeah.
You know, if it's too difficult, it's too difficult. And if it's too easy, it's not helpful. So, all right. So I guess we
march on.
Sarah woke up early, the sun pouring through the apartment window. She stretched lazily and placed her feet, one by one, on the floor. Rising from the bed, she tiptoed through the boxes which lay everywhere and put a kettle of water on to boil. Waiting, she glanced over all her possessions, grateful she had a whole day before her. She scooped instant coffee into a cup and poured in the now boiling water. Stirring the coffee, she tried to decide where to begin. She washed them thoughtfully.
Yeah, I have to say, I quite like it. This little thing of sort of she acts it out and then she says it without acting it out and reads it a bit faster. Because I'm finding myself doing it. I can see her, like, you know, walking around and tiptoeing the boxes and all the rest
and
of it.
And the thing that I picked up on as well is the subtle things that you could say she acted it out, but I'm not sure if it was there or if I'm applying that when I'm remembering. But when she's talking about, she's kind of contemplating her day and she's grateful for all the things around her, I don't feel like that was very apparent when she's acting it out. But I was like, well, so that's introduced now. So what are the students doing right now? They're remembering, and they're remembering all the physical things. They're remembering stirring the coffee and pouring the coffee. So maybe it kind of helps the brain parse out the different language points. You go, oh, well, I remember this thing. This was a physical thing. What's this grateful thing? What's this contemplation thing that she's just mentioned when she's talking about what she's going to do with her day? I don't remember seeing that, but I remember the kettle. I remember talking to her saying coffee. So it's kind of interesting the way that I'm going through the process and trying to apply that to the students.
Yeah, I agree. I quite like it as a cognitively engaging thing, because sometimes I think it's not easy to get people to cognitively engage other than actual direct communication. And if you're in a one-to-one class, it can be tiring to talk all the time, although that's a lot of the time what we end up doing as teachers. And in a group class, students are never going to be talking all the time. So I think it's interesting to have these sorts of activities where you're, especially with adults, you're using other aspects of cognition. And yeah, I really like this idea that, you know, it's not just the listening. You know, it could quite easily just be like, okay, now I'm going to read it again at a faster speed and you try and understand it. But just this idea of like, no, kind of imagine what I was doing. You know, I just really like that element of it. Yeah.
Dried them all and laid them carefully in the cupboard. As she closed the cupboard door, she sighed and looked at the calendar. Tomorrow, her roommate would come, but for now, Sarah had a home of her own. Okay, what I'd like to do now is give you each a copy of this. You could pass them to each other. And then stand up. We're going to read it together and see if we can act it through. First, let's see if we can help ourselves remember all of this vocabulary, all these verbs. All right, let's try and act it out together. And the idea here is that every time you say something, if you can do an action, that will help you remember more of the vocabulary. So, again, so we'll wait. So we'll start and we'll read together and act as much as you can. If you need a little space, maybe you want to move over just a little bit so you don't poke other people. Okay. All right. Ready? Okay. Sarah woke up early. Right. The sun pouring through the apartment window. She stretched lazily. And
this is fantastic. Yeah, I think it's wonderful. It's this is, so I gather this is the concert memorization sounds that active, an example of them doing it actively. But so what I really liked about the instruction as well was it wasn't, we're going to act out, follow my actions as I read out. It's you read out and you try to act out what you remember or what you connect. So it's, they're individualizing, because you can see some people when they wake up, they're doing like this with their eyes, or some people are like doing kind of like moving that thing. So it's kind of, it's them personalizing it. And that's going to make it easier for them to remember.
Yeah, it's that element of it I like. The kind of droney drill I'm not too sure about. It's kind of like, because she's doing this sort of synthetic narration, and then they're kind of
I see your point with that. I kind of feel like this might be just the first iteration, though.
Yeah, totally. And the vocabulary aspect of it still is worthwhile.
One by one on the floor. Good. She tried to decide where to begin. She took a quick sip of coffee and searched out her box of books. She ordered them neatly on the shelf. Then she lifted her suitcase onto the bed. She unlatched the clasps, opened it, and hung her dresses carefully in the closet. Great. Then she put the rest of her clothes in the chest of drawers.
Looks fun as well.
Okay, very good. Okay, sit down. Yeah. Good. Okay, you're very smart. Have you noticed? Yes. Okay, this is easy, isn't it? Yeah, it is easy. Piece of cake, right.
What's that?
Okay.
Suggesting.
A little bit on the pronunciation.
It's easy.
As you see, I have it coded in color.
It's not the droid you're looking for.
Can you read this one? Tiptoed. Stretched. What's the difference there? Tiptoed. Stretched. This is a D and this is a T. a very interesting aspect of English pronunciation in the past tense. Let's try these and see if this is true. Let's read. Tiptoed, ordered, opened, closed, poured, cried, dried, sighed, stretched, placed, glanced, scooped. Do you hear it? Stirched, unlatched, washed, looked. Great. If you could take out the envelope that you have on your chair now, I have a surprise for you.
I feel like I've been M. Night Shyamalan, because this feels like a massive twist. I thought that this was just going over Lexi, but it's actually pronunciation. What the hell?
Have one in each hand. Probably the easiest if everybody had the same one. So if you had your T in your left hand and your D in your right hand. Okay.
Oh, Rich.
Yeah, what do you call it? Envelope under the seat was kind of a bit of a special one, wasn't it?
It's a bit Penn and Teller.
It is, actually, yeah.
If you look under your seat, what the hell?
The only time I've ever experienced that, it was quite bizarre, actually. It was in Vancouver in Canada.
Oh, yeah?
And I went to a festival. It was like a comedy slash performance festival. So kind of like the Fringe, but a really small version of it. Yeah. I don't know if you went to it when you were living in Vancouver, but anyway, we went there and went to a show that was about it was a comedy one man show about this guy who like grew marijuana in his bedroom, and he spoke to his plants, and it was very entertaining. And at the end of the show, he's just like, oh yeah, we've like taped something for you underneath the chair. And literally they put some pot in an envelope. And this was at the time when it was around about 2005, and marijuana in Canada had suddenly gone into a legal gray area. It was a very short space of time when it happened. And I don't know if you remember this. It depends whether you were following the news in Canada at the time, but there was actually a shop that had just opened up and was selling marijuana in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of playing chicken with the cops, kind of saying like, we don't think you've got the laws, close us down. What actually happened is probably about a week after I went to that show, actually, they're like, cops turned up and busted them, and like, well, no, they didn't bust them. They closed them down. I don't think they ever actually went to jail. The people who were running the shop, but they shut them down and said, you can't just sell pot because you've decided to do it, kind of thing. But yeah, they took in the rather ballsy decision in this production to sort of give people a free sample. But that's the only time I've ever experienced this, like sticking an envelope under someone's chair. So it's a funny one, isn't it? It's like it's a lot more quirky than like handing them out, isn't it? Okay, here's your handouts. No, it's reach under your chair.
It's so bizarre. It's
kind of an aside, though. I don't think it's that's necessarily anything to do with Suggestopedia. I feel like that comes more from this particular teacher.
Now, I'm going to say one of these verbs, and I'd like you to listen carefully and see if you think it ends in a D or a T. All right? Okay, just by...
See, we can see some evolution there of the way we teach pronunciation now, can't we? Because I don't think anyone in the communicative language classroom today would say, oh, does it end in a D or a T? Because already you're kind of throwing the students off, aren't you? Because you're saying D and T, and they're like, well, neither of them end in D or T.
Yeah,
I mean, we don't say stretch D and stretch T, do we? So,
yep.
Yeah, I think these days people would definitely say a D or a T. Yeah.
Yeah, a sound.
Yeah.
Stretched. Should have the blue. Yeah, the blue. Stretched.
Well,
it's listening.
They're using the colors as well, which is good. So they're not having to say the word. If they don't, if they can't.
Blue.
Yeah.
Jello.
Yeah.
You're relaxing too much. We need to be relaxed and alert. Okay, relaxed and alert. All right, open.
I saw crazy.
Hey. Yeah. Okay,
that should be pink.
Do you get the feeling that, like, this is like a teaching institution where, okay, they teach, like, some of these methods or whatever, but it's almost like they're doing this as, like, a test, you know, like a trial class? Because it's like she's saying we need to be relaxed or alert. But if these were regular students who were doing this method every week, surely they'd know that.
They've probably just roped a whole bunch of people in from the language department.
Like off the street, yeah. I mean, I think at the start of the program, someone was saying it's a teacher training center or something, right?
Yeah.
So I guess that would kind of, that would sort of make sense. It's a shame that we don't have more footage of just classrooms around the world that were doing this at the time. You know, that'd be fascinating, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no, and if you're watching this and you are doing Suggestopedia, please send us a link and, you know, we'd love to have you on the show and look at any videos that you might have. But carrying on.
Okay, closed. Anna plays it safe. She puts two cards up. Right, okay. Tried. One in ten. Tried. Okay.
I do like that it's active, though.
Okay, can't look. Okay, unlatched.
Blue, red.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the rather than just the physical stuff
rather than just shouting it out. I mean, they might just.
Yeah, that's way better. Yeah, one thing I do wonder about is the utility of other students kind of looking at the. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if there's a lot of utility in that, or whether, you know, if we could make it a private thing. So let's say you just have your mobile device and you just press which one you think. Dink or dink. So just you and the teacher know, and the teacher can go, oh, you know, Ben didn't get that one right or whatever. I wonder if that would be better, or whether there is something to say for this kind of peer pressure of, oh God, got that one.
No,
wrong.
No, you know? I see that. And there was this, and you know, I'm going to elaborate this on another episode going forward. But there was this German teacher of physics, and he used to have kind of like a clicker system that would inform him of you know, the answers. He would ask like yes or no questions. It would inform him of how many people answered yes, how many people answered no. And when he was doing his lectures, he would use that to inform, oh, I need to elaborate more on this because there's a low percentage of knows or what have you.
Oh, that's really good for the question, like, do you understand? Yeah.
Yes, because, you know, you get rid of that element, and it's a very good point that you bring up. You know, are they putting up the blue because they think it's the correct one, or they're looking at their friend?
Yeah. And then the further question of, is there some utility to that even? Like, if you do sort of, you're going to put up the wrong one, then you see, oh, everyone else is going for that one. You know, is there, because maybe there is something to be said for that.
It's true.
But it's never something that I've thought a great deal about. One of the reasons being that we don't really yet have the technology to do like a kind of a secret vote. I know there's one thing I did when I was in Japan, because in Japan, people are so afraid of being wrong. That I used to do a thing where everyone closes their eyes and then you hold up your left hand for one answer and your right hand for the other, right? Uh-huh. So then the teacher can see if anyone gets it wrong, right? So that would be kind of a way of doing it, but
it's very smart, and it's very smart of you to consider and come up with that for those students, because it's something that we've not brought up with this yet, but it does come from Suggestopedia, this idea of the comprehensible input, the lower effective filter. So eliminating language barriers, and, you know, we tend to apply that to, you know, more lexi or grammar or whatever, but I think what you just described is the same thing. It's a language barrier, and you found a way to eliminate that, you know, idea of face, the embarrassment where they might not engage properly, or, you know, to help them, and just by having your students close their eyes to do the left or no. And that, you know, it's, that was another point from Suggestopedia that I got, this, the idea of the comprehensible input and the broader way that it can be applied.
Yep. Yeah.
Unlatched. Okay. Good. You're getting pretty good, so I think we'll stop there. That you can practice that a little bit later. All right. If you, I could ask hands. You don't have to put things on the floor, but you're going to need your hands. See if we can do a little practice with the verbs that are irregular. These were all nice and easy because they had an ED on the end, but see if we can work with some of the verbs that aren't. I'm going to throw you the present tense of the verb, and just for your security's sake, you have them here. Wake, woke, lie, lay, put, put.
Got an awful lot of boards as well.
You can say the past. Okay?
Yeah.
Ready? Okay. Put. Good. Lie. Lie. That's always safe. It gives you more time.
Lay.
Take. Have.
Long.
It's okay. Did it hurt?
It's okay.
Okay.
He's still conscious.
Good. Wake. Take. Good. All right.
You ever done that thing with the ball or something similar?
I only ever do that as an icebreaker. So, do you know, like, have them throw... I always used to do an icebreaker of, like, oh, my name's Neil, what's your name? And then throw the ball, and they say, oh, my name's Johnny. And then they throw it, they say, what's your name? And then you go around, and then it's the case of you identify the person, then throw to them. So he is Johnny, throw, blah. You know, just as kind of like a quick thing. And I like doing that because I know that everyone else is engaged and I can move off of that in like a couple of minutes. But to do it as part of a class, generally, no.
Yeah, I mean, do you get people standing up when you do it?
At the beginning, yeah. But, you know, this is kids.
Yeah. No, you can... So I started doing it when I was at the summer school. And I remember the reason why I did it is because you get these kids coming into your class. They've just been doing sport, you know, and they're all bouncing all over the place. 16, 17-year-olds, you know, full of energy. I remember one time, it might have been one of the things that actually inspired me to start bringing a bit more sport into the classroom was like, there was this girl from Italy who just like, as soon as we got into the class and they'd all sat down, they were doing something. After 5 minutes, she stood up and just started doing stretches. You know, I'm just like, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, I'm really stiff. I need to do some stretches. You know, sit down. No, I need to do my stretches, please. So, you know, this is what teenagers can be like, right? And it kind of made me think, you know, well, maybe she's got some sort of a weird point there that, you know, they've just been doing all this sport, and then suddenly they're expected to sit there and do English class time, you know. So I started getting some more physical things in the classroom. One of them was a ball that I had. And, you know, I had a thing where it was like, throw the ball. And they catch it and do it. You just use it a little bit just to get a bit of engagement and stuff, you know. And it was like on the verge of working, but also had this element of like not working. Is what would happen is that if you use the ball for a bit with one class, they start to get, because they kind of throw it to each other. It became like that. And that would be the next person who answered whatever the thing was that we were doing. And it became like more about throwing it to each other than anything else. Whoa, you know, and I didn't quite realize at the time that it wasn't really working out. And later when I was in teaching in Spain in my normal classes, I introduced that with the teens as well. And they really loved it, but it got out of hand super quick.
Yeah.
And that became, I remember they used to come in and they just wanted the ball all the time. And I was like, no, the ball's just for the end of class when we're wrapping up. But they used to look forward to it. But as soon as the ball came out, it was just a thing of who can throw the ball the hardest at someone's head, basically.
Yeah.
And it kind of evolved into that very quickly. And so it got to the point where I was like, right, the ball is over. That's the end of the ball. And of course, they hated that because that was their favorite thing. But there wasn't really any utility to it. Because it wasn't contributing to the language learning whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it just made me think there where she was doing it with those adults there, throwing it to them. And it kind of like when someone threw it, kind of bounced off that guy's head, you know, and whatever. And ho-ho, that's kind of funny, but also it's a little bit disruptive. And it reminded me of when I was studying at Edinburgh University. And, you know, one of the lecturers there had a go, and he was quite a good teacher, actually. But we were in a lecture hall that he's not usually in, obviously. And he'd found they had like this sponge dice that was like a microphone. And he was so keen about it. He was like, right, if anyone's got any questions, I'm going to throw you the dice, you know. And he literally did it for two questions. One of them was me, which I kind of scuffed it and then caught it because it was like a bouncy dice, right? And I kind of said my thing into the thing and then I threw it back to him. And then one other person had it. And it kind of bounced around and they dropped it and then they picked it up. And I think he realized after then, oh, this idea, which someone had obviously believed in enough that they'd wired up they'd like hooked up a wireless microphone into a fucking dice and wired it up to the like speaker system in the lecture theater, didn't actually work. It just wasn't an idea. It just doesn't work as much as you think it's going to.
Yeah.
You need to do one or the other. Either it's going to be thrown and catching and that stuff, or people are going to be sat down. You can't hybrid it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the whole issues around gamification. But I guess that's for another video.
Mm.
With this, it doesn't chime.
It doesn't fit.
It doesn't fit with Suggestopedia. So I don't know, you know, like if this is.
Again, it seems like one of her things she's sort of thrown in that didn't. Because I haven't read anything where Suggestopedia does this. So unless it's just this is the games element of it.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a game, was it?
Great. Thanks. Okay. Now, if you could take some time to go over these with a partner. The green sheets. This will give you a chance to practice your pronunciation and to see if you can remember some of the words. So if you could work in twos, 2, 4, 6, 8. Yeah, I think there are even. You might have to, they're 24? Okay, so there should theoretically be partner for everybody. All right, what I'd like to do is have you practice one person reading through and the other person act it out. Okay, just a little bit. All right? Okay, so one person read and the other person act out. You want to read. Okay, Kofi is reading, so then you have to act. Just turn to each other, just in your seat. You don't have to move too much. Just for practice reading. Maybe we'll have time.
Sarah once woke up early.
So you turn. Okay.
The sun pouring through the parlor window.
I think there's an extra person, so maybe three people. Can you read and they two act? Okay. Okay,
that's fun.
I hope you've had a chance to go through it at least once. Mm-hmm. We now need a volunteer to be Sarah, and we, the class, will read, and one person can come up and see if they can go through the activity. Shukri. Beautiful Sarah. Here she comes. All right, come. Okay, we need the beautiful music, too. Mm-hmm. All right, so Sarah can go to bed. And all of us will do the work. We'll read. Okay. He looks very comfortable. Okay, ready? Sarah woke up early.
So this is still the concert session. This is passive. So it's review, but with the music.
It feels like they've gone backwards, doesn't it? Because that little purred activity they were doing was kind of like, you know, these days we would see that as you're stepping away from the teacher towards some autonomy. Mm-hmm. And now it's like you've gone back to the whole class. I don't really know why that would be the case.
Because you've got the students doing what he's doing individually, so you've got more students doing it. I don't particularly understand it. My inclination is that it's kind of either for reinforcement as a group thing, or maybe it's like a transition before she goes into the finish, the elaboration, the drama or something like that. I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah.
One on the floor, rising from bed, she tiptoed through the boxes which lay everywhere and put a kettle of water on to boil. Waiting, she glanced over all her possessions. Glance over all your possessions.
She had the whole day before her. As she closed the cupboard door, she sighed and looked at the calendar. Tomorrow her roommate would come, but for now, Sarah at home of her own. Bravo.
Very well done. He was a very beautiful Sarah, don't you think? All right, now just to see how much we can work with this and to give you a little bit homework for the next class, I'd like to ask that you turn your paper over. I'm going to give you a short dictation of some of the words.
Okay.
Is this very difficult? Piece of cake, right? Piece of cake. Relax. Okay. All right. Again, I'm going to read you a few sentences. They're not the same as from the story. They're the same words, but they're different sentences. All right? Got that? The same words, familiar words from this reading, but different sentences. Okay? The first one, Sarah looked over the dishes her mother had sent her. Sarah looked over the dishes her mother had sent her. She glanced at the dresses which hung in her closet and quickly put them in her suitcase. And quickly put them in her suitcase. Okay, then. Your homework for tomorrow, you have two quick and easy things to do. One would be to check the dictation against the proper spelling on the other side, and then bring that to class tomorrow with any questions you have. And second, before you go to bed tonight, if you could just take a minute and take out this piece of paper and read it through for yourself, trying to remember as best you can some of the pronunciation and the intonation that we worked with today. Okay? So see you tomorrow. Okay. All right. Bye.
So I feel like we haven't really got a full method there. Kind of a demo bit.
Yeah, they doesn't seem to have that end part where they've learned with, you know, doing their own drama or song or game or something like that. I mean, you know, we could say that them doing their pair work was that part, but, you know, that was too controlled for me. So that was very interesting. I really enjoyed a lot of the ideas and the implementation of it. I think bringing that into a modern language classroom, there's definitely elements that you can use from that. There's, you know, you could even do that class, and I think it would be helpful, especially maybe for more intermediate or advanced learners. I'm not sure sure about beginners, but the issue that I have with it, and this is more from a business or you know professional point than a learning point, is the amount of preparation that you would have to do, I feel, to emulate that particular class. You know, the three boards, all that realia. I don't know, did she write that text herself? You know, did she prepare all those cards? You know, I look at that and I think, you know, where I work at, you know, institutions, yeah, I barely get 30 minutes to put a class together. So, you know, unless it's, you know, this is something that she's built up over time, and then she's finally been able to put together a long, you know, a 3-month course, that, and then just she's just built that over time, so she's not having to prepare so much. But it seems so top heavy to actually get this started. But that was kind of one of the things that I took as a negative from that.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not how I would imagine doing Suggestopedia. I feel like the throwing the ball around wasn't necessary. The dictation at the end wasn't really that connected to what had happened before. And the kind of backward step from the pair work of one person acting, the other person describing, to suddenly one person at the front of the class acting and everyone else describing, that felt like a step in the wrong direction. So I think if you cut out the ball game and then after the pair work, then you go into your freer, just open chatting, right? We just talk. Okay, now we're going to talk about the things in this story, you know, and just chat about it, because that's what it says. That's what the method's supposed to be. Just have an open conversation rather than even worrying about, you know, a task, some sort of anything, you know. It's like they were kind of flipping between being more controlled and freer and more controlled and freer.
Yeah, what came to mind was two teachers we've actually interviewed. One, Mark Almond, with his theatrical drama-based classes, and also Jamie Keddy with his dialogic storytelling. So, you know, I could kind of see modern day would be like a combination of both of those. So you, instead of having you acquiring authentic material, you are creating that authentic material with the drama, and then, you know, you're going through that process of acting it out, reading it, and then having them do the same thing, you know, doing the pair work and also, you know, like talking about it, but then asking them what they thought about the scenario, or, you know, like what arises from that you can kind of talk about it. And then you've got all that inbuilt vocabulary from that play drama that you've staged.
Yeah, you can definitely see the influence of the method on the way that people teach in the modern classroom. And I just wonder if you could adapt it now into something that's still viable as a method in and of itself. I feel like there is something there. Obviously, as we said before, most people take that idea of being relaxed while you learn and kind of run with that. But there's something else there with the, I think, for the dictation and the acting it out. There's elements that I like. And you do see activities like that in the classrooms today. So they've obviously sort of come from somewhere. And, you know, Suggestopedia probably had something to do with that. It's interesting to note, though, it's probably one of the things that we can note about this, that it's not an uncontroversial method. In fact, there's a note on the Wikipedia page saying that it's criticized as being pseudoscientific. And apparently one of the reasons for that is that they found that you can basically change elements of the method to make them essentially a placebo, and it was like the same effectiveness. And apparently, I don't know what they changed, by the way. I don't know what the study was. It was some study in the late 70s. And Lozanov came along when they did that, and he said, yeah, but placebos work. So if you compared it to placebo, but placebos at work. he basically had a thing that if you sort of believe it enough, then it has some power for you, kind of thing. So so they kind of tried to disprove his method, and he said,
it
yeah,
makes me wonder then, what do you know, like what,
because it works,
what are they saying with its placebo? Because surely, do you know, like, what do they, yeah, they realize that they didn't actually learn English and they suddenly lose the ability to
no,
learn
I suspect
English? What is it?
I suspect it would be stuff like the Baroque music.
Oh,
and
right.
Maybe they would play some other kind of music, just maybe they just play random noise, or I don't know. We'd have to have a look at the study, but the Wikipedia has put that exactly. This, I mean, this is why Wikipedia is not always the best source in the world, but Wikipedia has put that in the article as pseudoscientific, and it references that study from the 70s. Mm-hmm. Whatever they did in that study, it was something to do with a placebo, and Lozanov responded with that. And if you have a look around the internet on what people say of Suggestopedia, when they mention that, they tend just to mention Lozanov's response. So what they say is Lozanov himself admits that Suggestopedia can be compared to placebo, which makes it sound bad, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But we don't know the full details of what they're doing there. And on the other hand, you have people like Krashen, who, because I think it was Krashen who kind of brought these three language learning methods back into everyone's consciousness as we sort of awareness as we kind of moved into communicative language teaching. And, you know, he noted Suggestopedia for its results, particularly when it comes to communicative achievement. So whereas the students who were from Suggestopedia wouldn't necessarily do any better than other students in vocabulary and grammar, they were very effective communicators compared to the other methods of the day. So it seems like there's something to it. And I think me and you as teachers can both see elements of interest there.
I think one of the things that when I kind of poked around the internet and did my pseudo research, it was always kind of this hypnotic method or something like that, and it always reminded me of where the way that people wrote about it. It reminded me of back in the 90s when you would get these hypnotic audio cassettes or something like that, you know, like and you stop smoking with hypnosis, or, you know, like improve your personal confidence with, I think I might have done one of those kind of like self-confidence booster things or something like that. And you just listen to it and they play music and they give basically affirmations, and it somehow got lumped in with that. And I don't think that that's it. I think that with the Suggestopedia, the hypnotic element about it, the pseudoscience that people might be referring to, would be something like that. But I think the idea of having a relaxed atmosphere with music, I don't know why it has to be Baroque music, but with some relaxing music, classical music, rather than, you know, maybe something that's not like thrash metal, but something relaxing, comfortable chairs, you know, plants. We all know, you know, it's proven in psychology that, you know, like colors, even having a blue room rather than a red room is more relaxing. Sitting on a soft chair than a hard chair is more relaxing. Playing soft music helps plants grow. You know, this sort of stuff has actually been proven. So why it's not being used in a classroom to create an atmosphere that's more receptive to learning, it makes logical sense. Whether it's scientifically proven, I'm not sure, but I do see how that can, it makes logical sense. And in regards to the techniques that she's using, like I pointed out at the beginning, what she's doing when she's talking and narrating as she's going about this little act of her morning routine is what we would do as an authority figure, as a caregiver when you're with a child. And that has been proven to help language acquisition. Absolutely no doubt about that. So that process of watching someone as they are talking about what they're doing and then using that as a base point to use these cognitively engaging exercises, you know, maybe not so much the dictation, but more of that pair work where they have to kind of like a, or something where they have to figure out what are the words linked to the actions. I think there's something in that. And, you know, if someone was out there that wanted to do a little bit of digging, I think they could definitely create something from that. And the people that I pointed out before, Mark Almond and Jamie Keddy, even Lonsdale, he's actually got something for learning English for Chinese speakers. You know, I see lots of elements in that, but it's very interesting. I don't think you can throw the baby out with the bathwater at all.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah,
even you know, that thing, the point you were making about music. Yeah, I mean, I experimented quite a lot with that. And I think overall, I'm quite positive about music. I think it does have to be used a little bit carefully. For example, if you use music with lyrics, which you can, then you have to dip it when there's a communicative activity going on. And in fact, you should dip it, as in dip the volume, when there's any sort of whatever kind of music you're using. When you're given instructions, I would probably kill the music as well. Just have no music. The most competent I got at it, again, was at the summer school, which is a unique environment. So it's a little bit different because the kids are coming in like wired, you know. So I used to have them, as they come in, I used to have the music kind of blasting out. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like, you know, as they came in, I kind of turned it down until I got it down to a lower level. And then like the music would sort of transition from like the kind of party music that they kept playing, like that the social team would always play in their meetings and stuff like that. It kind of basically transitioned into my music. So it was like, and it did have an effect. And actually, one of the nice techniques that I got with music was there's a thing you can do where you kind of like turn the volume up a bit and then just go straight to silence. And everyone notices it because it's like they're talking, and then it suddenly gets loud, and then it's just like, boom, suddenly the music goes. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, huh? And it gets everyone's attention. So that was quite neat as well.
No, it's really, you hit a really good point, and it's matching emotional states. And I always refer to it, and I don't know if this is a technical term, but it's collect and direct. So, you know, you have to match, collect your students at whatever level they're at. So be it high energy, low energy, just, you know, they're kind of like subdued after lunch, or they're all hyped after, you know, sports. Meet that level and then direct it in the way that you want to go. And that's basically what you did. And music is one component in being able to do something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot more to be said for using music in the classroom, but I also think it's a very individual thing, both for the teacher and also personalized to the students, because, you know, I like to try and use classical music a lot in the classes, and I've tried it with teenagers, and I actually still think it does have a positive effect, but they whinge about it, and then they say that they want to listen to you know, whatever by Ariana Grande or whatever. And then you just get into that debate with them then. Just the fact that you're playing music at all means that they want to be able to play their music. So I think you have to customize it, and you have to make the call yourself. Mm-hmm. But it is something that it would be nice for there to be a bit more theory on it, I suppose, a bit more kind of established theory based on studies and stuff, mm-hmm. to really get an idea, like, is this just anecdotal stuff that we're relying on here to say that, you know, music can help people learn, or is there something really to it?
Yeah, and if you're out there and you're watching and you have experience of using music in your class and you want to come on the show and talk about it, we're very open to stuff like that. And again, I want to reiterate, if you have used the Suggestopedia method or a method similar to that and you want to talk with us, remember to send us a message at eltunderthecovers@gmail.com. And you know, if you've got any videos, you know, we're happy to react to those videos as well, and kind of give our feedback, our thoughts. Do you have any final thoughts that you'd want to share in regards to Suggestopedia?
I think it would be quite interesting to see a different example of someone doing it, which, as we've said, is not particularly easy to find on the internet. However, yeah, it would be interesting to see if there are any out there, especially of someone who's quite experienced, because I did get the feeling, I don't know if this is true or not, but I did get the feeling that the lady doing her teaching there kind of felt like this was something she'd picked up to make this video,
yeah,
rather than something that she was super familiar with. So yeah, it would be nice if it was someone out there who's been teaching Suggestopedia for like 5 years. I think that would be kind of funky to see how that went down.
Yeah, I saw so much preparation with it that I can see why it's not picked up as much. And you know, having to do whole courses in that way just seems like a lot of preparation, as opposed to like the silent way, which we looked at, where it's, you've got all this and it's, you can literally just make stuff with those rods. And you know, obviously there is going to be preparation, but I see that there's more fluidity in what and how you can teach.
Yeah, it's almost, it was a bit more keyed towards a kind of a dogma style thinking, wasn't it, with those rods? You just kind of go in there with the rods and off you go.
Rods of justice.
Whatever comes up, you can start doing stuff with that. Whereas here you're going in with a script, and that text forms such a massive part of the class that it's not so easy to kind of go off piste until you get to the very end bit that we didn't even see in the video that we've seen today.
Yeah, and you would need to be totally keyed into the levels of your students, because if that's too difficult for them, then what are you going to do in your class? Mm. If you know, you go in and you like, and you do a text and they just don't get any of it. Okay. Well, like I said, if you are interested in coming on the show, contact us at eltunderthecovers@gmail.com or leave a comment below about what you thought about Suggestopedia as well. And I've been Neil of Team Teacher Fame. If you're looking for more of my stuff, go to teamteacherchina.com. We've got some PowerPoints that you can download and instantly use in your large public school classrooms. Those PowerPoint materials are turned into a video format in Team Teacher English for self-study or homework purposes. And then we have Team Teacher Baby, where I take my experience as a teacher and put that into parenting. And the professor.
So you can go to youtube.com/ProfessorRich for English teaching videos. You can go to you can now do a YouTube search. You might be able to do this anyway for POG UK, POG UK, to find gaming content. I haven't uploaded the first video yet, but it'll be up there soon. So and we'll have a link down below at some stage. And twitch.tv/ProfRichGaming for live streams.
Excellent.
ELT under the covers. Yeah. So like, subscribe, share with all of your friends and family.
All of the subjects could be studied by suggestive or accelerated learning. We understand that word suggestion in a wider way. That is a problem of communication. If a communication, every subject is a problem of communication itself, development. That means that all of the subjects could be learned by this system.